And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Alana Johnson fell in love with the fungi of Juneau's rainforest nearly a decade ago. That led her to start her own small local mushroom farm. And as a recipient of Spruce Roots Path Prosperity Contest, she hopes to put local fungi on even more plates. KTOO's Anna Canny reports.
It's a snowy day at the Brotherhood Bridge Trail in Juneau, but Alana Johnson is thinking about summer.
This whole entire area would just be like covered with moss. And it kind of reminds me of like a fairy, little fairyland.
She points to a stand of trees across the trail.
The forest is just completely lush green. Sometimes it's so thick you would not even be able to see from like here to there.
As her boots crunch along, she stays vigilant. She knows what she's looking for.
Under a branch or something, or like the space in the bottom of a tree, there's usually mushrooms in there. And so it's
in the February cold, there are only conchs, a woody, bitter shelf mushroom. But Johnson says the forest is abundant with edible mushrooms during the rest of the year. She's been bringing locals and tourists out here for nearly a decade with wicker baskets and a stack of field guides. She calls these outings mushroom forays. Her small business, New Earth Fungi, is a combination farm and education outlet where Johnson hopes to demystify fungi as food. Mushrooms have always been a hobby for Johnson, but when the pandemic hit, she decided to make them her livelihood. She was serving as a Peace Corps member in the Caribbean when all volunteers were evacuated.
I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I felt depressed about the whole situation. And then I was like, you know what? Like, maybe this is the time to like start my mushroom business.
She had been an amateur mushroom cultivator for years, so the business started with a few batches of homegrown oyster mushrooms, a popular variety known for its mild, savory flavor.
Because they're pretty easy for me to grow, and a lot of people are familiar with them. They love oyster mushrooms.
But soon, she wanted to move beyond common varieties to bring new flavors and textures to local palates.
So it's like, okay, what do people want to eat? And then what can I provide that people have not eaten before? Like maybe lion's mane. And they see it in the grocery store. They're like, what is that weird thing? And it's like got little like tentacles. But then I tell them how to cook it. And now it's become more popular. And I tell them what the medicinal benefits are. And they're just in love with it. And it tastes, I mean, it's one of my favorite mushrooms, honestly.
Now she cultivates 8 different kinds of mushrooms. They grow out of large plastic bags that line the white metal shelves of her fruiting room, which she operates out of her home. A combination of education and cultivation formed the foundation of Johnson's business plan. She refined and pitched that plan at the Path to Prosperity Business Boot Camp last fall. It's an annual business development competition hosted by Spruce Root, a nonprofit focused on community development. This year, the prize was a $25,000 grant for 2 recipients. Johnson was one of them.
When I got off the phone with her, I just like broke down. I like called my parents and I just started crying because I feel like I've put so much work, like time and energy into like all of this. And sometimes it can feel like there's definitely days where I'm like, why am I doing this?
Johnson says local demand for her mushrooms has been high since she launched the business in 2020. They're sold in a handful of grocery stores and restaurants across Juneau, but she's been struggling to keep up. Cultivating mushrooms on a large scale is hard. It demands space, time, and a sterile environment. Johnson says the prize money will be a relief. She'll use it to invest in mushroom sterilizing equipment and maybe a larger commercial space. She also hopes to hire help, which will free up time for the thing she loves most, mushroom forays.
It's just such a relaxing but like healing thing to just be like connected and just know like what things are around you and to have a greater appreciation and respect for food.
And she believes that connection with local food goes hand in hand with a connection to the land itself.
I feel so connected to this place through mushrooms too. It makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside.
Johnson will resume her mushroom forays in the summer. In the meantime, she's excited to provide the foundation for Juneau's mushroom-based meals. In Juneau, I'm Anna Canny.
Southeast Alaska's sea otter population has been growing quickly, and concerns are bubbling up about the impact they have on fisheries. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, elected officials in Ketchikan are pushing the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to come up with a plan to control otter populations or turn over management to the state.
John Ryan lives in Hollis on Prince of Wales Island. He's seen the island's population of sea otters soar over the last handful of years, and he's worried. Residents like Ryan worry the boom will shut down profitable dive fisheries like sea cucumber and goey duck.
The quota has gone down over the years, and it's hurting people's livelihoods. And that money that's generated from that is going through, and it's, you know, raising families and putting food on families' tables.
Sea otters have a critical place in the ecosystem. Scientist and University of Alaska Southeast Professor Barbara Morgan says otters eat shellfish that would otherwise decimate vital kelp beds, which would be a big blow to the ecosystem.
Kelp beds are hugely important to the environment that they are in. They provide protection for the coast that they are along. They break the power of waves as they come onshore, and so that really limits how much the wave action can affect the coast.
But there wasn't always a healthy population in Southeast. Russian fur traders overharvested the animals in the 18th century, and years later, wildlife officials started to try and build the population back up. Now there's thought to be more than 50,000 animals around the region. Now that otter numbers are growing rapidly, Morgan says one specific concern is that established populations on the western outer coast of Southeast Alaska will make their way into the inner channels of the Alexander Archipelago.
And that would put them into areas that have really active shellfish fisheries, crabs in particular, and shrimp. And people don't want the sea otters to impact those harvests, those fisheries, and wipe them out. Totally understandable. I'm not sure that's an imminent threat, though.
But Ryan says he wants to get ahead of the issue before it becomes a bigger problem. He shared his concerns in a proposal to the Board of Game, asking the state to devise a plan to manage otter populations. The board dismissed the proposal out of hand before the meeting began. They said they don't have jurisdiction. That's because sea otters are protected under federal law by the 1972 Marine Mammal Protection Act.
It's not something that's going to be put in place, you know, overnight. It's going to take years, but there needs to be a harvest.
So Ketchikan's Borough Assembly highlighted it as a key federal policy issue during a recent lobbying trip to Washington, D.C. Borough Mayor Rodney Dial says local officials want to see the federal government manage otter populations more aggressively or turn management over to the state.
So we're just asking for a dialogue. We're asking for the federal government to be involved in the process, to listen to people on the local level, and hopefully that we can all work together to, you know, because everybody loves sea otters. And we just need to find a way to balance the population so that the sea otter population doesn't wipe out populations of other creatures.
As it stands, sea otter populations are managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Current protections allow Alaska Native people to harvest sea otters for subsistence food purposes and to use their fur to create goods and sell them in the form of handicrafts. Anyone who is not Alaska Native is federally prohibited from harvesting the animals or selling or buying their pelts. Fishermen have raised concerns over otter populations before. In 2010, then-Congressman Don Young introduced a bill that would roll back some restrictions on the sale of sea otter pelts in response to pressure from fishermen. Grant Echohawk, one of the assembly members who traveled to Washington with Dial, says the goal is to simply find balance and strike up a conversation.
What we're looking for is to make sure that we, as this is happening, that the pendulum isn't swinging too quickly in the wrong direction.
Echohawk says he wanted to make sure that lawmakers had the most up-to-date data on otters in Alaska, since the populations have risen considerably since the species came under federal control. A 2015 University of Alaska Fairbanks study found that Southeast Alaska's sea otter populations have grown by 10 to 15% each year.
We just want to make sure there's smart decisions being made.
No matter what happens, Ketchikan's tribe says that area tribes need to be involved in the decision-making. Tony Gallegos is Ketchikan Indian Community's Cultural Resources Director.
Anybody that's proposing changes in the regulations should be talking with the tribes before they propose regulatory changes.
Gallegos says tribes are best able to manage the sea otter population as part of their traditional lifestyle. He says that right now he doesn't want to see any changes to the federal law protecting the otter, at least not until scientists have better data.
There needs to be a determination on what a good optimal population size is, and then try to maintain the sea otter population at that level. And that's probably going to require culling those populations by hunting.
Whether any changes are coming, though, is an open question. Officials at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service declined to say whether they're exploring options for otter management. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 25 degrees and sunny. Clear skies may stick around for a bit tomorrow, but in the afternoon, it looks like a chance of snow. In fact, a winter storm watch is in effect starting early Friday morning with the possibility of 6 to 10 inches. You're listening to KTOO.